Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We're also rebroadcast at 2 p.m. Pacific Time Sundays on a2zen.fm. That's a2zen.fm. There is a link on the website to take you directly there on a Sunday afternoon. If you miss it on a Saturday or you want to listen to it again, and you're not really interested in downloading it, then that's perfectly fine. We encourage you to join us every Saturday and check out our guests. We have links to all of our guests, and we want you to find out what they have to say beyond the interview. So please do so. Beautiful day here on the Central Coast as here we are beginning the second quarter of 2012. It absolutely amazes me how fast time flies, on top of the fact that how long we've been doing this program, and it is a joy to have repeat guests, such as my guest today. We'll introduce him in just a moment. But that's kind of what happens over the course of time. You have people on the program who make such an impact that you want to have them back on and continue discussing, having this conversation that literally we could go for hours on end with many of our guests. And today's guest is no exception. He's the author, co-author of Sanctuary, The Pathway to Consciousness. It is a novel. And my guest is Stephen Lewis. And Stephen, it is a great pleasure to have you back on the program again.
And it's a great pleasure to be on your program, and it's always new because every year I think, well, I finally got it together, and then the following year I say I was wrong again. And
well, I don't know that. So I don't know that you're necessarily wrong.
So not really wrong, but you understand what
yes,
I mean.
Yes, I do.
It's just so much more. It's things change. One little thing,
yeah.
One big thing, just changes everything. And so my work's never going to be over. I'm destined to work until I fall over.
You and me both.
And I think I told you my fantasy, I believe, is right before I transition, I'm going to sit up and say, I've got it together, and then I'm going to go.
Well, same here. I jokingly say this to people, that they're going to have to peel my cold, dead carcass off of the console at the radio station.
Because, that sounds very much like the NRA somehow.
Well, the other aspect of it, too, is that unlike many others who they say died doing what they love, I still remember this to this day. It was a magnificent rock climber. He was a free climber. He would climb the vertical faces of cliffs and so forth. And unfortunately, he died one day. Had a misstep, slipped, and he fell to his death. And I heard the news report saying he died doing what he loved doing. And I said, no, he didn't. He died falling and hitting the ground. That is not, you know.
Yeah, he liked going up.
Yes, he loved the exhilaration. Well, and in a way, that's kind of what we're going to talk about today in terms of the AIM program, in terms of, I keep seeing MC squared, or is it MC cubed, but it's all around the same thing. And it really comes down, I think, to a basic principle that science has taught us probably just in the last, 20 or 30 years, that everything is energy.
20 or 30 years? Oh, my, no.
Even longer than that.
Well, E does equal MC squared.
True.
And I think that's about what it is. That's 1911, I believe.
I don't think people phrased it in that context where we began to understand, though, more recently, that we are, you and I, and every person listening, and even those not listening, we are all connected because we're all made of the same stuff.
Ah, now you're talking about something different. Now you're talking about the nature of, sure, everything is energy, but what's the nature of stuff? Energy, Richard, is not very enlightening.
No.
In this sense, because everything is energy, and that is everything you know about energy. It is. There's nothing else you can say. It doesn't have any properties. Energy doesn't have, excuse me, it does not not have any smell or taste. It doesn't have any dimension, weight. It doesn't have any location. It doesn't have any time or space. It simply is. Which, you know, if I was going to fix you up with a date and you said, well, tell me about her, I'd say she is. So what the hell? Come on, give me a break. And the point is, and this is the really earth-shattering news, that everything that is particulate, unique, every salient, identifiable detail of our lives is energy shaped by consciousness. That's what's important to me. Now, what that means very simply is you are in charge of your life. You create your life. You shape it. You mold it out of energy. You mold it for better or for worse, according to what you need to do, what you want to do. And if you're misguided, you're misguided, but it's still you.
Okay.
In other words, you can't run around saying, look at this lousy hand I was dealt. You were the dealer.
And we're finding that we are the dealer.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, because you're... many of our listeners listened to last week's program, and it's kind of dovetailing now because of what you've just raised. Yes, energy, and then you said that energy is formed, if you will, by consciousness.
It's shaped.
Shaped. So I'm going to ask you, not so much philosophically, although you're certainly welcome to answer the question any way you like, but more from a scientific standpoint, what is consciousness?
Not what is it with us? I don't think you can answer that term without interjecting philosophy.
Okay.
Because to me, consciousness is very simply that measurable quality that is determined by the extent to which you perceive your connection to everything and everyone in the universe. And the higher your consciousness, the more you perceive that connection. Now, you've been involved in Buddhism in your past and maybe in your present. It's all the same oneness.
Right.
And so consciousness is the oneness, but your perception of it is your consciousness. It's still all one, but some people who are ultimately insane can see no relationship between any two things, no connection, and that is a working definition of unconsciousness or insanity, as I see it.
Hmm.
So you can't speak of it. I mean, you can, if I start telling you mathematical equations, which I'm not going to do, but I could, about measuring things in units of consciousness, that wouldn't answer the question. You have to answer it conceptually.
Okay.
And that is the closest I can come to an answer as I understand it.
Is consciousness energy too, but a different kind? I mean, is that, can I even go there in this context?
Well, everything is energy. So technically, you're never going to be wrong. Because once you use the term everything, you can simply run around like a parrot saying, that's energy too, that's energy too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
And who's going to argue with you? It's all energy. But consciousness, you know, it's very funny. We live in a Western society, Western context. And when we speak of energy and we speak of life force and things of that sort, in an Eastern context, when they speak of their word is chi, okay?
Uh-huh.
Or perhaps prana, but chi is,
right,
is a more a well-known word. They subdivide chi into the chi you breathe, the chi that you eat, ancestral chi, which is, of course, is, you know, hereditary,
mm-hmm,
and on and on and on, and the different pathways of chi and how they intersect, and it's a far more complex system. We are still struggling with the idea that there is such a thing as energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it. Even the scientists know it. But because they have no weapons for measuring this, they hesitate and they're afraid to make a statement. They know it. Everyone knows it.
Right.
You know, that there's energy and that everything is energy, and it's all connected. The holographic concept is, you know, I still say not 20 or 30 years, but because I'm well into my 70s, and these are concepts that I understood and were being dealt with while I was in school. So it's more than 20 or 30 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, some would be asking the question of us right now, where are you guys going with this? Well, I've kind of taken us to, I've taken us to this place for two reasons. Number one, you and I have been chatting like this since the book Sanctuary Pathway to Consciousness came out in 1998, the first edition. And you and I have been chatting for 14 years, if you can believe that, 5 years on this show. So having spoken about energy in the way that you have, how has this understanding for you of energy shaped the work that you do today?
It's constantly being reshaped, and it's entirely from the work I do and the understanding that comes out of that work, and hopefully from my life. But, you know, you start off saying, you know, where's this going? I mean, it's not a new idea. It's kind of like, remember Ponce de Leon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he was looking for the fountain of youth. Yeah. You know, it's a great idea, you know? I mean, beats any bar I can think of. So, okay. And furthermore, if you find it and people know about it, you're going to need reservations to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that right now. And the bartenders are going to make a good, you know, a lot of tips, and so on and so on. The point is, I believe that we transition, we die. It's an old-fashioned word, die. Mm-hmm. We don't die anymore, we transition.
Transition, yes.
used to die when I was a kid, no more. We transition fundamentally because of what we brought with us, which is to say, what is hereditary, or karmic, if you wish to call it that. That's how new age you want to be.
Right.
But we die from that. It doesn't always say that in the obituary column, but it is that. In the absence of a bullet in the head or a truck hitting you. Okay? But other than that, it's always we die from our weaknesses. Our weaknesses are determined by what we bring with us. Now, there are caveats, Richard, because there's nothing you can't heal, and that includes that which is hereditary. But in the absence of you healing something, that defines your weakness. And if you have a fundamental, let's say, a respiratory weakness, and, you know, even if you don't die from, let's call it, cystic fibrosis or from lung cancer or whatever, it's there and the weakness is there, etc., and maybe you'll catch a flu, an influenza. It's the same flu that your grandmother catches, but you may be a victim of it. You'll die from that flu.
Uh-huh.
Well, the reality is the flu is just the last straw. It's nothing. Your grandmother caught it, and she's fine. You know what I mean?
Right, right. But it wasn't for her.
Who cares?
It was the last straw.
But the last straw, I mean, think of the concept.
Mm.
What would you say if you saw a guy with a camel, and the camel was carrying, well, let's call it 10,000 pounds. And then the guy took one more straw and put it on this camel's back, and the camel collapsed and died. And if the guy looked at you and said, this is a worthless beast, couldn't carry one straw, what the hell would you say to this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, you'd be absolutely convinced immediately he was an imbecile, if not insane.
Yeah.
And if he didn't say anything, it's because you just figured he's too stupid to understand.
Right.
And so there's a summary for you. Now, when you transition from that last straw, it's not the last straw. It's not the flu. It's the underlying lung cancer, cystic fibrosis, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We transition from that which we bring with us, hereditarily, karmically. The question is, when you heal every single hereditary imbalance, so you have no fundamental weaknesses, well, then what? What is going to be the cause of your transition? Everybody catches everything. What you catch doesn't mean a damn thing. It's what you don't overcome, getting back to that same flu.
Right.
and you don't overcome something because it impacts you where you're just weak enough. Well, if you don't have any of those profound weaknesses, well, you see where I'm going. Then
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Hello, Ponce. I mean, that's what... Except that I don't think the answer lies in some swamp in Florida. I think the answer lies within us. We are that empowered. We are capable of healing ourselves.
So if I was...
This is not just some new age, new wave, concept. It's not... And this is something, look, you can see any journal of medicine, and in every issue you can read about some kind of event involving someone who's supposed to be dead and ain't. And the whole thing is, what happened? How come he ain't dead?
Right.
You can see all the time. It's, why is there this inexplicable spontaneous remission, and so on and so on? Why? And that's the whole thing. Well, that's what I'm saying to you. What will happen? Now, fortunately, I can't speak about it empirically because I'm still here.
Right. And okay. If you weren't here, you wouldn't be able to speak.
Yeah, right. I mean, if I tell you I expect to live to be, let's say 140, I can say anything I want. It doesn't have much, it doesn't lend me any credibility. However, if I say that when I'm 135, people are going to listen. Well, that's what we're waiting to see.
Yeah.
In the words of the immortal Yogi Berra, it's tough to make predictions, especially when they're in the future.
Well, let me ask you about that, because that ties right into, of course, the work that you are doing. And the thought has occurred to me as you're sharing this information about your impact and even the people who conduct the work at AIM and their impact on the results that people are getting. You've heard of, I'm sure, the story of a group of scientists who were trying to duplicate a scientific project, an experiment. They wanted to see if they could get the same result every single time, and they didn't. Every time they conducted this experiment, they got a different result, and they couldn't understand why. Then they began to back up to the bigger picture, and they began to track who was there and even talk about where they were emotionally and mentally and what was on their mind, what were the things weighing heavy on them and those kinds of things. And they began to see that there's no way they could ever conduct this particular experiment twice and get exactly the same result because there were too many variables that were actually affecting the experiment itself. How does your mindset, your consciousness, as we've talked about it, and that of the others affect the results that we get as participants?
Well, the others are secondary because most of the important testing, evaluating, is done by me.
Okay.
And that being said, it's probably the most difficult battle in my life. The struggle to not affect the results of my evaluation. And I'm very, very good at it. And at the same time, there are always new things coming in to trip me up, and I've got to be alert. I'm the best I know at this, without worrying about false modesty. And at the same time, there are others whose hands are steadier than mine. There are those who certainly are my equal and more in intelligence. And on and on and on. There's nobody as suspicious as me.
Okay.
And I am every second checking myself to see to what extent and just how did my desire for a given result affect the result. That is an ongoing battle that will never end.
Yeah.
Because, you know, intention will affect your findings. Intention will change your findings.
So when you go
and I have to approach something with absolutely no intention or interest. Now, fortunately, the people I'm evaluating, look, there's been 60,000 people. Of so, what, 59,000 are strangers? It helps that I don't know them, and I have absolutely no personal feeling. Zero. I don't know who they are. I'm looking at some little black and white picture, and I have no feelings whatsoever. Fortunately, that helps. And even then, it's a struggle. If it's someone, if I care about the results, it makes the struggle far, far greater. You're absolutely right, Richard.
But you do care, but in a different way. That's the reason you
I
do the work.
I don't care personally.
No, not personally. But
right.
But you have a concern. This work that you do, as you see it, is very important because you're trying to help people to raise that consciousness. And the only way they can do that is to get through these various, we'll call them issues, conditions, if you will, that you are helping them to get through so that they can focus more on the other aspects of their life. I mean, my gosh, I can only imagine what it must be like when I would listen to, years ago, I would listen to these various prayer programs, and I worked there for 15 years, and I heard the same people calling in year after year with the same condition, year after year after year, and I'm thinking, my God, are they not seeking medical assistance? I mean, the prayer program was a wonderful thing, but nothing's happening here, or it doesn't seem to be happening, and it's like it seems like they're stuck. And how can they move forward? How can they?
Well, I mean, it's very easy to counter that statement. Let's put it this way. Here, I've got this girl. When I was in practice in L.A., she was a patient of mine, and she had muscular dystrophy, and she went on the AIM program. She's been on since I was in practice in L.A., she and her husband. And at some point along the line in checking her, I found she also had cerebral palsy, which, you know, they're both utterly incurable. And that's all there is to it. And at some point along the way, there were a couple of hereditary imbalances that were similar to components that looked like both muscular dystrophy and cerebral palsy. And I wasn't thinking about her. I got a call. Well, EMC Square got a call saying, would you please check her? And we did. And I didn't find the muscular dystrophy frequency. And then later on, some other things came up. I didn't find that. And she began writing letters about, it's been 35 years since she's been able to do this or that or that or that, and she is now. Everyone around her is freaking. So, you know, I understand your question, and the answer perhaps is that situation is her. Now, you're going to encounter this whether it's prayer or medicine. I think the real question is, how dynamic is the field? I mean, there. Begin with this understanding, and I know it, and I feel it, and I believe it. There are many things that cannot be treated with our current technology. I think that's, I mean, physicians readily state that. You know that, right? There is nothing that cannot be healed, because healing is not bounded by the same parameters. I mean, look at the work that's been done with people who have multiple personalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they change their personalities, and they've got this all on camera. They change their eye color. How do you change your eye color? Let me see you do it. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't.
Yeah, I can't
either. The point is, there is no limitation to healing. And so some people are just willing to hang in there and have the faith in that. And is everyone get a satisfactory denouement result? No, not at all. You know, I mean, but what are your options? What are your options? What are her options, this girl?
Yeah.
And now suddenly she's walking again. After 35, she was this young, attractive girl when I met her. She's getting old like me, and suddenly she's walking around.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is simply the only answer I can come up with to your question. And I don't know what I would do if she and I traded places. And I don't know what you would do. Maybe you don't know what you would do.
Yeah.
And let's hope you don't have to find out where... Let's hope we don't have to find out where what we have is just simply our hope and our faith, and that's it.
Yeah.
But those who do, they are the reason I am a card-carrying geriatric, and I'm never going to retire. I can afford to retire. I've been very successful.
Well,
I can. I'm serious.
I hear you, and I'm the same way. I subscribe more to the philosophy of 150 years ago, that basically you work until you drop, not because you have to, but because you are fortunate, and I am fortunate that we found something that we love doing that has meaning for us in our lives that keeps us going. And I'm hoping that I can live. I made the statement when my great grandmother on my mother's side was 90 that I was going to outlive her, and she kept aging. And she made it to 100, and I said on her 100th birthday, I said, yeah, I'm going to outlive my great-grandmother, but she's making it really hard. But I plan to live way past 100 and continue.
Well, now look, I came from the other extreme, Richard.
Yeah?
My mom, who wasn't, you know, awarded the best parenting, you know, award in the world, used to always say to me, son, because I was kind of a prodigy, do what you got to do quickly. We don't live long.
Oh,
and that's when I was a little kid, you know?
Wow.
And when that happens, one of two things occurs. You either roll over and say, the hell with it all, or you go, you want to bet? And I understood somehow that the answer to whatever it was within me in the realm of healing. And the more I read, it was at a time when quantum mechanics was really coming into its own. And at the same time, some of the Eastern healing arts were coming to their own here, such as acupuncture, etc. I began to understand the confluence that it was a matter of energy, and that matter of energy was absolutely independent of what we called medicine. Now, it's not independent of medicine in some other cultures. I mean, it's just not. That's what acupuncture is about, etc.
Stephen, you know, you said something at the end of the last segment that we talked about. I am a Reiki master, a level 3, and I was taught about absentee healing and how you had to get permission from the person that you're going to be sending this energy to in order for it to take effect, so to speak. And I would venture that you, by virtue of the fact that people who sign up for the AIM program send you a photograph, which is how this all starts, and then you take the photograph from there. And there's a principle, and I just remember this. I don't know if this was from television or movies or what it was, how Indians used to, I used to hear this phrase that you don't want to take the photograph of an Indian because the Indian is afraid that you will take their spirit. Well, with that photograph that somebody gives you, there is a certain element of truth to that, isn't there?
Well, yes, there is. Simply, it's not just their picture, it's their hologram.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're talking about that being in a photograph, or it's being in a lock of hair or a drop of blood or whatever. I mean, all, you know, this, the information that we have about Santeria, Yanigo, Voodoo, is Hollywoodized. But these are healing modalities, not used to be sensation. Forget about my weekend with Bernie and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about helping people heal themselves. And it's helping them by making sure they never forget to focus on what they need to heal. It's a variation of the prayer wheel that the Tibetans used. And this has occurred throughout the world in many, 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 many different societies that probably have had no direct connection. So it has something to do with inherent knowledge and wisdom, if you will. But as far as what you're saying, yeah, it's a battle I have to fight all the time, because someone will say, "This is incredible. I'm putting my son on." My son, he's 42 years old, and he's got a wife and a couple of kids. I'm going to put them all on. And I go, "Well, you can't put them on. He can put himself on."
Mm-hmm.
You can put them on if you have power of attorney. That's fair. You can put on your pet. If your son is like, you know, a little kid, you can put them on. But you can't put on another adult. There's free will. There's a matter of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that simple. And choice, free will, is nothing more fundamental in our lives than that. And, I mean, I had in the book, there was a guy who was putting on his employees, and I didn't know about it, in the book Sanctuary,
mm-hmm.
the book that I wrote. Okay? And I found out he was doing it, and I confronted him. He said, "But I know this will help them, and they need it." I said, "I agree with you, Kevin." That's Kevin Trudeau. I said, "I don't fault your intentions. It just ain't your right." You know who Kevin Trudeau is, I assume,
oh, yes.
Right?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. I said, "It's not your right to do it, Kevin."
Right.
"They have to make that choice themselves." He said, "Well, some of my employees are kind of dumb." I said, Kevin, it doesn't matter. Because Kevin Trudeau's been with me that long.
Yeah.
He used to fly to L.A. when I was in practice from his home base of Chicago to see me regularly.
Yeah.
As a patient, yeah.
It is a technology. It is actually referred to as a spiritual technology that basically... That is illustrated in the book Sanctuary, that allows the individual to remove... basically subtle energy imbalances. Now, I attended a Wayne Dyer seminar in Phoenix, Arizona. It had to have been back in 1998 or early 99.
Was I there?
And you were there.
Okay, yeah.
And I remember I'm sitting there listening to Wayne, and then he introduces Stephen Lewis, author of Sanctuary. And we bought the book at that same day and read it. And I'm sitting there listening to you describe this work, and my mind is spinning. Now, I work in the field of audio, and in my mind's eye, I began to envision the screen that I look at as I'm recording, and it's a stereo signal, and I'm watching the wave, sound wave of voice or music or what have you, being created digitally and so forth. And as you're describing this, I remember an experience that I had where I wanted to create what were called sing-along tapes, where I would record onto the computer in stereo the song. And then I would take one channel, either the left or the right, and then I would flip it over vertically. In other words, take the top and put it to the bottom of the bottom to the top, one channel only. And then I mixed the left and the right channels together. Now, what I did by flipping that particular channel was I was taking it out of phase, and what happened was the similar frequencies of the wave were canceled each other out, the dissimilar frequencies came to the forefront, and then everything in between would shift into different positions. And if it was a vocal that was the similar, it was either eliminated or pushed way, way into the background. And so I'm creating these sing-along tapes. Well, that's what went through my mind as you were sharing this information. And
Sure. I mean, Bose uses that technology.
Yeah.
I mean, many people do. You know that.
Yeah. And I thought, this is incredible that somebody is able to tap into to the energetic frequencies of these various imbalances that we have. And if we have thousands and thousands of names for them. You've already mentioned quite a few of them here on the program so far.
There are about 500,000.
And that's just the ones you've identified so far.
That's everything known, plus just the vast array of those that I have found that are not known, yes. Yeah.
And so is my example a fair, we'll call it analogy of the work that AIM does?
Well, it is in its broadest sense, but there are variables where that wouldn't hold up, but fundamentally that is the case. That for every frequency, be it audio or otherwise, there is a balancing frequency. There's a canceling frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And there are harmonics that use all these frequencies together to create an entirely different frequency, etc. And the whole field is endless and bottomless, and I'm just basically scratching the surface of it. But I don't think that statement will ever be changed. I'll be scratching the surface of it.
Right.
Because there are just so many variables in consciousness that, it's kind of like, think about chaos theory, where theoretically there's no such thing as chaos. That's what chaos theory says. So which makes you say, well, how come they have this theory called chaos theory when there ain't no such thing? Okay? Because there is no chaos for those who can perceive the order. That's quite a little caveat they have there, isn't it?
It is.
And that, so there is no chaos to Jesus and Buddha, and the rest of us are wandering around looking at all this insanity. You see what I mean?
It would.
Anything that's outside of your perspective, outside of your field of view,
right?
That is absolutely nothing but chaos because you can't perceive the connectivity. You cannot perceive their orderly juxtaposition.
Yeah, that's
you
it.
Can't,
yeah.
You can't perceive it. So, so there's no chaos. And if you don't believe me, go ask Buddha.
Then the chaos theory is nothing more than a matter of perception.
Precisely. Precisely. But who has that perception as, a pragmatic, practical endeavor? Who are you going to turn to?
Well, when I take a look at the universe, I mean, people will look out at different aspects, different spaces out there, and they'll see all of this chaos, as they will call it, going on. They see meteors flying this hither and yon, and comets and asteroids and supernova, planets are going, stars are going supernova, and on and on and on. And I have to tell you, I just sit there and I go, yeah, well, what seems to be the problem? That's just what the universe does. And if you take that to a microcosmic, on a microcosmic level, use a telescope or a microscope, rather, to view the various events that are going on a cellular level in your body, you'd see the same things.
You're not permitted to just be a Zen master checking it all out. You are supposed to see, but you can't get out of it that way, Richard.
I see.
You are supposed to perceive and understand the causal relationship.
I see.
The interaction. And so you can't just sit there outside of the equation, which is what you are cleverly trying to do, and nobody's going to let you get away with that.
And is it because I'm in it, because I exist, I am a part of that event, those connected elements?
So. And that gets back to what you were saying before, like, to what extent, you know, is my doing this work affect the results I find? Mm-hmm. I told you, it's the most difficult. Get out of here. Get out of here. my cat.
I see. There's a little chaos going on there.
Well, not to him. Walks in the, he's taking his customary stroll on the keyboard.
Ah, yes. Okay. I have the same issue, and I have 7 of them. So mine is times 7, my friend. Mine is times 7. Let me let our listeners know before we move along here. First of all, my guest, Stephen Lewis, has written the book Sanctuary, The Path to Consciousness. And he also has, actually, I'm not sure, and I'm going to have you codify this or clarify this for our listeners as far as focusing on one website, because I actually have at least 2 or 3 listed here, and aimprogram.com.
That's the simplest, because aimprogram.com, this is the AIM program. And if I may say a little bit about it, it's what we do to help you heal yourself, heal whatever it is you need to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's different for each person, obviously.
Right.
But you will select what you need, what balancing frequencies you need, contingent upon what your imbalances are. Obviously, your wife is not going to select any frequencies for her prostate, nor you for your ovaries.
Right.
But you will do it. And that's why this is a spiritual technology, because it has to do with the interface of consciousness. You cannot remove consciousness from spirituality. It is inconceivable. And so there is a technology, it's a computerized holographic technology, but it can't work without your consciousness. It's kind of like, you know, early on, way back when, you've heard me mention before, I was the first time I was with Wayne Dyer. I was at his house in Florida when he lived in Florida, and he said, "Hey, Steve, I've got my picture in the DMV, you know, my driver's license, and how come it's not doing anything?" But I said, "It's just a picture, Wayne. What do you want it to do?"
Good question.
And he said, "I don't get it." I said, "Wayne, if you walked into Home Depot and saw a stack of wood and a chainsaw, would you say, 'Why is that saw not cutting the wood?'" They're tools. It's your intention that makes it happen.
Mm.
And that is the key. That's why this is a spiritual technology. Because your intention is your consciousness. That is not simply a technology. And I said, without your intention, nothing will happen.
Hmm.
And he went and wrote a book called, you know, The Power of Intention.
Yeah.
You recall.
That,
I
yes.
called him up and said, "Hey, you owe me money." I gave you your title.
And
I won't tell you, what Wayne said. But
he threw back to you the argument about the tools, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a spiritual technology, but I count on certain things as being fundamental. For example, you may say what you want about this or anything else, but I'll tell you something I know about you. You have an instinct to survive. It's an instinct, which means what you say or don't say is absolutely irrelevant.
Hmm.
It's there. And therefore, if you need to choose something to help you survive, you will. You'll choose it even though while you're saying, "I don't care," and you're going to grab it. That's why they call it an instinct. You know, mm-hmm. a couple of swallows can bicker all the way to Capistrano and back. They're still flying there and back.
True.
It comes down to that.
Yeah.
So I count on that and use it. And I use it as well as I can, because only you are going to heal yourself. But the issue is, there is all this help available. And then, of course, there's the issue of, are you going to select any help? It's not that anyone's chosen. It's that, do you choose it?
Interesting.
And, yeah, and I never try and convince anyone, because it's impossible. You can't convince anyone about this kind of stuff, because they're going to sit there and say, but what if, and what, and blah, blah, forever. So I liken myself, see myself as a messenger. I got a message, I deliver my message, and then I move on my way, and I deliver it somewhere else. What you do with that message once you've received it is your choice.
Yeah.
And that's why I told Kevin Trio, no, you can't put these people on, because they can choose it for themselves.
That's why
if you want to pay for them, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who pays. It's not that expensive anyway. But you can't make that decision, Kevin.
Right. Right. You know, and I've often given the information, or the warning, depending upon how you wish to perceive it, to our listeners from time to time, that I think it's extremely important that each one of us be very careful of the things that we take in consciously. In other words, that we intentionally listen to or watch or put ourselves in environments that are really not good for us and so forth. And so I say that if you listen to this program, and you listen to one of my guests and what they have to say, it's too late. You've heard it. You can't unhear it. Okay? So be forewarned. It really goes to, I think, a very fundamental point as far as I'm concerned, that intention is extremely important. And if you are intent on raising your consciousness and raising yourself to a new level of living, then choose those paths that support that choice. I myself...
If you're intent on that, but you're making a supposition that is not necessarily so.
Okay.
Let me explain what I mean.
Okay.
I know that if you have a given disease, call it cancer, call it this, whatever it is, you will select whatever balancing frequencies there are to heal that imbalance. Heal it from your consciousness, and your consciousness dictates your body without a doubt. I know that. I know it empirically. I know it by observation. On the other hand, there are people whose bodies are very, very healthy, and they, by design, keep their consciousness very low. They have absolutely no desire or intention of raising their consciousness. And boy, you don't have to wonder who they are. Go pick up the newspaper. Look at television.
That's right.
It's not one of the great mysteries of life. And because survival, at its most primitive level, is instinctual. Consciousness is volitional. And not everyone wishes to have a higher consciousness.
Well,
I mean, I know you. When you write to your life, demonstrates it. I do. My life demonstrates it. Mm-hmm. But there are many people who simply say, what I want is to heal. I want help in healing what I need to heal, and that's it. And forget about consciousness. Show me the money.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, they're within their right to do that. They have free will, free choice to go whatever direction they wish.
Absolutely so.
And that's...
But the thing that's interesting now is, this is the first time, I mean right now, this revolution has taken that line and or it's forcing everyone to line up on one side or the other.
Yeah.
That side of, I cannot survive without a higher consciousness, we cannot, or that side of saying, yeah, well, you know what, we look like we're doing, it's good enough for the Flintstones, it's good enough for me. This is the first time there's been a revolution in consciousness. And I think we brought that upon ourselves. I'm convinced that's the case. We did it by virtue of our unbelievable progress, our unbelievable advances in technology that were absolutely independent of any spiritual link.
Hmm. And that is the catch-22, so to speak, because everyone has the choice to go a particular direction. And yet, again, we have these two sides that are, in essence, they're pitted against each other. How do we reconcile that? How do we heal, if that's something to be healed?
I think the planet's going to do that for us, you know? I mean, there are some species where they are self-determining that way, like lemmings.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're familiar with lemmings, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, periodically, the old ones say, see you later, and they go off a cliff because there's too many of them, so they go off a cliff and let the young ones continue. But we don't do that. For humans, it's like, go ahead, I'm right behind you. Got your back.
Yeah. and I'll watch it as it falls.
Yeah, right. So for us, the planet will take care of it. It's called thinning out of the herd, and it's happened before.
Yeah.
And it's happening right here and now at a monumental level. Somehow, all the powers have conspired to keep it a little bit under the radar, but that's not going to last much longer.
Yeah.
Because it's just extraordinary.
Well, it is. And
so that's what's, and so that is the answer to what the thing you were raising. It's the planet will do it for us, because, you know, it really isn't an issue of will the planet survive. The planet's going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, will we survive on it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very interesting. I'm always left with a little spinning going on after talking with you for an hour, and it's been a great. you leave me with even more to think about than I started with, and that's a good thing. At least I am working towards making changes in my life to raise the consciousness, to be more consciously aware of other people and their choices. Again, as much as I would love to have the world a particular way, and most of my life I've been somewhat of a control freak, I got to let that go and say, you know what? I can want what I want, and I have to let everybody else want what they want too. So, you know, and that's a real hard one, but that's what we have to do. Stephen Lewis, I want
to... The key word is you have to, because they're going to do it anyway.
They're going to do it anyway.
So
exactly. Stephen Lewis.
Talk to you next year, Richard.
Hey,
great.
I'm hoping maybe we don't have to wait quite so long. Sanctuary is the name of the book, The Path to Consciousness. AIM program, that's AIMprogram.com is the website where you can find out more. You can actually find out more and get on the AIM program and work towards healing yourself of those imbalances. Stephen, thank you again. It's been a pleasure. One final question before I let you go, and that is, who is Stephen Lewis?
Well, I am that whom you create. You've answered that already.
Okay. Well, that's a fair enough answer. And with that, I thank you once again for joining us on the program, and we look forward to having
Thanks
you back
for
soon.
Thanks for having me on, Richard. It's been great. And who is Stephen Lewis? I don't even know what you're asking me.
Well, we are going to wrap up the program. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until next Saturday at the same time, love to all.